My name is Salman Khan, and I'm here to present our work on ioptimal recovery from disk failures. This work was done in collaboration with Randall Burns, my advisor, along with James Plank from University of Tennessee and Cheng Huang from Microsoft Research. Okay, so back when digital storage systems started entering the mainstream, pretty soon people realized that one key feature that they absolutely have to incorporate is reliability. And how to go about it, they have two choices to achieve that. They could either go down the path of replication, which was easy to understand and implement, but rather inefficient in how it used storage space. And the other option was erasure coding, which was more complex to understand and implement, but far more efficient in its use of storage space. Now keep in mind, back then, storage was a relatively expensive resource. So that forced people to focus on MDS codes. MDS is maximum distance separable codes, which is a fancy way to say that these codes tolerate a number of failures equivalent to the amount of redundancy that they introduce. And I'm sorry, you can ignore that. So the idea was that the MDS codes were optimal as far as storage efficiency was concerned. Okay. But then we saw this emergence of workloads where data recovery was a very common operation. Examples of this were large data centers, which had nodes being taken down for either rolling out a software update or a routine maintenance on some node. So the point was that nodes were being taken down for some reason or the other, and if any I/O was directed towards that node, then this was considered to be a node failure, and so the recovery process would kick in. And this used to happen for a sufficiently large data center. This would happen fairly regularly. The second application was read Rayleigh systems. So long-term archival storage is an example where you have these huge volumes of data, and most of it is hardly ever read. So in fact, the most common operation would be the continuous probing of data to ensure that data is alive and it's available, because these systems are normally supposed to exhibit certain characteristics as far as availability is concerned. So reading or writing wasn't really that much in these systems, and it was mostly recovery operations. And so almost all these systems would mostly use a K of N MDS code, where you would need K IOs to recover from a single failure. And so the question we asked ourselves is, can we do better than K IOs? Well, it turns out that when we looked around, it turned out that most existing approaches to data recovery use matrix inversion of some sort. The problem with that is that matrix inversion would represent one possible solution, not necessarily the one with the least I/O cost. And so we came up with this new way to recover lost data, which minimizes the number of I/Os required for data recovery. It is a one-time computation which can be pre-computed for all failure scenarios beforehand. And another cool thing about our data recovery algorithm is that it is applicable to any erasure code as long as it has some matrix representation. So let me introduce this notion of a decoding equation. But I guess before I do that, let me just refer to the figure. And the figure shows a typical erasure coding example, where you have a generator matrix, a vector of data, and the resultant code word as the output. So you'll see that the input data and the code word are in terms of bits. Don't let that confuse you. Bits is analogous to elements or any units of storage that you like. So a bit can stand for a vector, a sector, or a block, or anything. But having said that, so decoding equations. So a decoding equation is a collection of bits in the code word, which whose corresponding rows in the generator matrix sum to zero. And so the idea is that we can decode any one bit in this collection of bits as long as the other bits in that set are available because of the sum to zero property. So in this example, D0, D2, and C0 form a decoding equation. If any one of them is lost, we can recover it using the sum to zero property. Okay, so now that we know what a decoding equation is, let's see how it can help us in solving this recovery I/O problem. So our algorithm to minimize I/O essentially finds a decoding equation for each failed bit while minimizing the overall number of elements accessed, or bits. It does that by enumerating all the decoding equations for each failed node, and then such that it minimizes the total number of elements accessed. Now, finding this combination of decoding equations is an NP-hard problem. But it's feasible to solve for practical values of F and E sub I. We convert the equations into a graph problem where we have to find the shortest path to solve our recovery I/O problem. We also employ pruning to restrict the search path search space further. Let me introduce some notation here. If you remember the decoding equations I just went over, we represent decoding equations as bit strings. So the decoding equation we just saw a few slides back can be represented as a bit string in the following manner, as you see on the left. And these bit strings go on to populate the graph nodes in our graph construction. And at each level I in the graph, each node in that level has an outgoing edge for each equation in capital E sub I. Now, I know this might be a bit confusing. Let me go over an example and clarify this. Okay, so again, our erasure coding example. And this time, D0 and D1 in the output fail. So the set of failed bits is D0 and D1. And so we enumerate all the decoding equations which can be used to recover D0 and D1. Now, having enumerated all the decoding equations, we then convert these equations into a graph problem. So in the graph, the starting node is always a series of zeros. And at level I in the graph, each node in level I has all the equations of E sub I applied to it. And so there's one outgoing edge for each equation in E sub I. So as you can see, for the first level, there were four equations for E0, and so that node has four outgoing edges from that node. And similarly, on the next level, E1 had four possible ways to recover the F1, and so each node in that level would have those four equations applied to it. So what we're doing is essentially at each level in the graph, we are recovering from one failure. And so the depth of this graph, you can say, would be equal to the number of failures we have. So the child nodes are calculated by a bitwise OR of the parent node with the bit string representation of the decoding equation on the edge connecting them. If you label each edge with the difference in the number of elements between the child node and the parent node, then the shortest path to the leaf, the sum of the weights on the shortest path to the leaf, will give you the minimum number of elements you need to recover from all the failures. Similarly, if you annotate each edge with the equation that it corresponds to, then the set of equations on the shortest path to the leaf level denotes the set of equations that you need for recovery to achieve that optimal I/O, recovery I/O. So for example, here you see that we reach the leaf level with a sum of five. And so once we process these other nodes, which are should be grayed out. This signifies pruning. So the idea is that we've already achieved, we've already seen a path of length 5 to the leaf level, and so it doesn't make sense for us to process these nodes any further. And so this way we arrive at a set of decoding equations which will give us an optimal IO cost. Okay, so let's see how our decoding algorithm compares to the existing method. So here you have a series of erasure codes, and we compare our decoding method with their own original decoding method. So the y-axis is the number of bits that we needed, according to our algorithm, to recover from a single failure as a percentage of the number of bits that the original decoding method would have needed. And so, as you can see, there are varying amount of improvements across the board for all erasure codes, some more than others. RDP and even odd have an asterisk next to them because there have already been results which mimic our results, but those have been independently achieved. But the difference is that work was specific to these codes, while we present a generalized solution for any matrix-based encoding scheme. Okay, so we have seen a way to optimize recovery I/O for all these MDS codes, but what if we look beyond this world of MDS codes and look at non-MDS codes to see if we can derive any intuition about the space? For example, what if we allow slightly lower amounts of storage efficiency in order to gain something as far as recovery I/O is concerned? So we earlier looked at replication in MDS codes, and it seemed that there's something special about these two sort of schemes. Replication it gives you the optimal recovery I/O cost, because in one I/O you can recover from any failure. However, the storage efficiency is not that good. While MDS codes are provably optimal as far as storage efficiency goes, but their recovery I/O cost do not fare as well in comparison to replication. And so it seems there's some distension between recovery I/O and storage efficiency. And so to explore this space and this apparent trade-off, we turned to grid codes. So grid codes is this sort of supercode which allows you to use two or more erasure codes on the same data, each in its own dimension. And so we're interested in low recovery I/O and high fault tolerance. So in our grid code construction, we had Weaver codes in one dimension and star codes in the other dimensions. Weaver codes had this desirable recovery I/O property where the recovery in the Weaver codes is independent of stripe size, so that gives you low recovery cost. While star codes have high fault tolerance, so that allows us to be resilient to large number of failures. Okay, so this probably allows you to get a better understanding of our grid code construction. We have the Weaver code, the vertical code in one dimension, and the star code in the other dimension. The thing to take away from this construction is that all single failures or all small failures can be recovered in the Weaver dimension, thus taking advantage of its low recovery cost. While faced with a large number of failures, you can take advantage of this other dimension, the star dimension. So looking at this figure, you can understand why a grid code would be highly fault tolerant, because if you are unable to recover in one dimension, you can try the other dimension. And so you should be able to recover in either one or the other in most cases, unless you have a lot of failures. And so let's analyze what information we have been able to glean from our grid code construction. We identified the only three MDS Weaver codes there are and plugged them into our grid code construction. For comparison's sake, we analyzed the three corresponding MDS code constructions which have a similar fault tolerance. And so for an MDS code, we use the Reed Solomon code. And so out of the three grid codes that we studied, the Weaver 2.2 code gave us the best I/O recovery performance, and so that's what we that's what we focused on. That's what we'll focus on here. So so comparing that grid code with its corresponding MDS code, you can see that while for the grid code you have extremely good recovery I/O performance, but relatively low storage efficiency. While for the corresponding MDS version of the same fault tolerance code, you have much better I/O, much better storage efficiency, but not as good recovery I/O performance. And so it seems that there is definitely some trade-off. There's an inherent trade-off here, which between storage efficiency and recovery I/O. We are still yet to arrive at a formal relationship materializing this trade-off, and we are currently looking into this problem. We're also looking into a programmatic search of generator matrices which yield optimal recovery I/O properties. This is a somewhat large space, but we think that it can be a feasible option to search for these matrices for reasonably sized systems which are in place today. So let's say for a 100 disk cluster, we should be able to run through all the different options for the generator matrices and come up with candidates for which exhibit optimal I/O recovery. And when we'll have any more results in this space, we will let you know. In the meanwhile, I'll have your questions. Thank you.
I have a question. Uh-huh. I was just recently actually reviewing a TOS article about some of this kind of erasure coding stuff, and I noticed that there are a lot of variants out there besides the traditional Reed-Solomon codes. There are a lot of other erasure code alternatives besides the traditional Reed-Solomon codes. Uh-huh. So I was curious if you have compared your approach against any of those other alternatives.
Our technique is applicable to all erasure codes, which can be represented in a matrix form.
Okay.
And so there are other erasure codes out there, some rateless codes, some non-MDS codes, but for the most part, Reed-Solomon seems to be a very common occurrence in erasure coding systems nowadays. And so this work is largely exploratory in nature. And so as an initial starting point, this seems to be the most logical choice to compare our algorithm against.
My other question is, I've noticed this in a couple of these erasure coding works, is it seems as though erasure coding is very CPU intensive.
It is.
But I never see CPU utilization benchmarks in these works.
Well, I guess that depends on the nature of the work.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's a very broad statement, but yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm really saying is, did you measure the CPU utilization?
No, we did not. Our focus was on minimizing the I/O aspect, so
right.
The number of I/Os needed for recovery. And so measuring the CPU cost or the time taken was not part of our study.
Very cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
So you said that you would do some searches on some size of systems. Do you foresee there being different answers at different sizes? And if so, if I were to sell systems different sizes, I would need to pick different solutions. And or can I have? Do you think I could have a similar one? And if I want to grow my system, I can keep adding capacity without having to change the erasure code of my system.
So if I understand your question correctly, I think that for any one size systems, any one dimension of matrix, there will be one optimal matrix which will give you the lowest recovery I/O. Searching for that, obviously, as the matrix dimensions grow, would be more and more will be harder or more infeasible. I would imagine that for reasonably sized systems which exist today, that search space can be attained in a reasonable manner. And yes, each data point, each matrix dimension will have one optimal solution for that dimension. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So let me ask you one final question. When you're recovering entire disk drives, and you choose the recovery plan that costs the least number of I/O operations, is that always the optimal way to recover, or do you want to use as many disks as you have at your disposal to do a faster recovery? What are the thoughts on that?
Well, so yes, that is the optimal recovery cost as far as the number of I/Os is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
We were looking at another metric, which was also in the table, which is the number of disks which need to be spun up. The implication being that if you spin up less disks, then you use less energy, and so on and so forth. So that's one thing which we've been sort of paying some attention to, other than number of IOs.
My question was slightly different. Let's say all your disks are spinning anyway.
Okay.
And since they are spinning, they are available
mm-hmm.
for you to read data from.
Okay.
And if you utilize them, maybe you can reconstruct faster with a little bit more number of IOs, but shorter amount of time. I mean, is that something that...
Not really. So you're saying that you access more disks
mm-hmm.
to... For what end?
To rebuild faster.
In terms of time?
Yes.
Unlikely. I would think that... time taken to rebuild would be proportional to the number of IOs you would need.
Right.
And
but if you can do IOs in parallel, you can use more disks and recover faster. Let's take this offline.
Okay, sure.